You're listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
That's Father Tim Grumbach next to me in the seat here. If you're watching live on Facebook, YouTube, and even Instagram, you can find Father Tim on Instagram. Where can they find you, Father?
At Fr Tim Grumbach.
On Instagram, no, that's Father Daddy Wop.
Oh my gosh, I'm off to a great start here. I'm Father Daddy Wop on the Instagram, but I do have my Twitter. It still exists, but I'm not on it a whole lot right now, so...
Those are those great moments where multitasking does not work in Timmery's world. And I had coffee today, and I don't have coffee often, so it wasn't until I got into the studio that I felt a little better, because before I'm like ready to go.
Yeah, you know I'm such a big fan of like John Paul II. Just hearing about the way that he could multitask, he could be doing two things at once. He could be, you know, studying some philosophy here, and somebody's reading something to him in another language, and he's taking it all in.
And he's at the Synod at the same time something.
Yeah, and my whole time, you know, trying to do two things at once, I just do both of them half as well. So
I think that though, technology, when you have a screen in front of you, it engulfs you, it draws you in more. So some of that multitasking, I think, is maybe a little more possible, but he's also a saint, so it was probably a great spiritual gift he had. Okay, Father Tim, so for those of you who don't know, I'm getting married in less than a month. Please do pray for me. My sister's getting married 2 weeks before that, so pray for her, my sister Jacqueline as well. But I heard about this tradition in, I believe it's the Korean culture, where the night before the wedding, all of like the groomsmen and the male family members get to go to the groom. He takes off his socks and shoes, and they beat the bottom of his feet. I don't know, with sticks or what, to remind him, because his feet are going to be all bruised, that you only do this once. And I was saying, wait, really? That's a thing? And it's a thing.
So that he's not tempted to be like, I'm going to get married again because I don't want to get my feet beaten again?
This is for life.
All right.
This is for life. And then he's standing on those feet all day throughout the ceremony, the dancing.
And so if he knows about this, he's like, why get married at all?
Why get married at all? Yeah, or run now.
Lord, if it's this difficult, why should anyone get married, right?
Right. Oh, we don't know any apostles or anyone who said that. Good to be with you guys. Thanks for joining us. So we have a full show packed in here today. What is the very first thing that the new Congress did after stepping into office? What did they choose? It's pretty telling. So especially now that there's a Democrat majority within the Congress, you know, we don't get super political here, but this is something you don't want to miss. We'll be coming down to what the party's really breaking down to and why this should matter to you. We'll also be talking about child exploitation and how I think that if you really took a minute to pay attention to this story about this little boy named Desmond, it would be a good opportunity for you to have conversations with people who are confused over the transgender issue and kind of some of the LGBTQ rights things, because I think it'll touch on the hearts and also the reasonableness of most people as we look to these issues. We'll also be talking about how important it is to really prepare yourself, as maybe you're experiencing a little bit of holiday blues now, or maybe a post-breakup experience. So we'll be walking through that as well. So don't go away. Lots to talk about. Also, what about hysterectomies? What does the church have to say about that? Please do stay tuned or catch the episode later. So Father Tim from St. Augustine's Parish is with us. He's a regular here on Trending. It's so great to have you, but I want to talk, Father, because you and I, very close to our hearts, have been the issue of the LGBTQ community and the confusion and, I would say, real cultural harm that's taking place.
Right, and getting to be in a parish and in a part of the world where there's a lot of the LGBT community and those who want to be faithful to the church's teaching, but also those who just want to get to know Christ, but are on different parts of the journey, coming towards the Bride of Christ, the church, and making sure that the doors are open for them when they're ready to come in. It's very important to my heart, to my pastoral heart, to know that we're speaking about this from honesty and truth and from the church's teaching, but also from a place of love.
And it's a very emotionally charged issue in an area that's creating creating a lot of confusion for people. And I think we have a lot of misplaced empathy where people know, you know, what is right, what is true, what is reality, but because of feelings, because of people just want to feel loved or feel included, they justify certain behaviors, but maybe that's not the best for a person. Well, let's make this really clear for a second. Let's talk about a little boy where this social experiment of transgenderism and more, we could say, is being experimented on. A little boy, he's now 11 years old. He's known as the Amazing Desmond. And he dresses up as a drag queen. They're calling him a drag kid. He was featured, we actually talked about it just a couple weeks ago on Good Morning America a couple months ago. And this child is being exploited. I mean, we're going to go through some of the things that are taking place right now in his life.
Yeah, and the name is actually Desmond is Amazing.
Desmond is Amazing.
Yeah, it's supposed to be that out there that it's not, you know, a regular sounding name, even the Amazing Desmond, as if he's some kind of you know, magician, you know, illusionist. But rather, it's supposed to be out there. This idea of Desmond is Amazing is his stage name, I suppose one could call it, drag name. I don't know what they.
He has a website. Yeah. I mean, he's been featured. This is what's kind of scary, you guys. Remember, this kid's 11 years old, and it's been for a few years now that he has been actively. He's danced in some of the big gay pride parades in New York. He has really just absolutely shocking. He's actually shown up on the YouTube channel of a notorious killer, actually, who spent 17 years in prison, Michael Alig, and now has this YouTube channel, very pro-LGBTQ, but it's creepy, Father Tim. So Desmond appears, again, a child on this former person who was prisoned for drugs and having killed someone. He is featured in the They actually have behind Desmond a picture of a little kid skipping a jump rope and the name of a drug, Rohypnol. And that's actually a date rape drug specifically used within the LGBT community. And that's right behind Desmond's head.
Yeah. Is it not the drug that's more commonly referred to as roofie? It's the date rape drug that knocks someone out when you put it into their drink. And this is something that we wouldn't want near any of our 11-year-olds. But somehow this young man has become a figure for some greater agenda than himself. So that they're claiming that you can place him in these situations and with these people. And no one's batting an eye. They're actually applauding what's happening here.
And the whole episode is creepy. I mean, these people actually do look drugged out. These two adult men who are sitting next to him as they're recording this episode. And like they're mumbling through their words. They're just saying outlandish, silly things. And it's in this kid, you know, you wonder, where's his parent? Like, gosh, I hope his parents are present. We're actually learning that his mother has said that Desmond actually has autism. And so I just can't imagine. I don't know what spectrum of autism this child may or may not have, but if this child has autism, why would you be putting him in front of everyone in addition to his struggles he himself already experiences?
Yeah, there's so much to say about this. And one of the things that first struck me is, again, that name. You know, Desmond is Amazing. They've given him a name, a stage name. And this is not what comes to my mind when I hear the word amazing. An amazement is something that takes us out of ourselves, that we look to it, and sometimes fear can come out of it. Sometimes just this holy awe can come out of it. This is something that, unfortunately, this young man will be thrown away eventually.
He's not even a young man,
yeah.
Little boy.
Yeah, this little boy will be thrown away eventually, because I do not see this lasting, you know, becoming a career. And if it does, this is not something that is drawing us to the awe and the mystery of the human being. This is something that is, I'm just going to say it, not being afraid to offend the drag queens out there. This is a mockery of the human person.
Yeah. And this is child abuse.
Right. And so when I think of amazing, you know, I look back to scripture at these moments where people are being amazed because they're witnessing something that can control the uncontrollable. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got these moments in the gospels in which, you know, what especially comes to my mind is the casting out of legion, you know, the
right.
Legion of demons. That, you know, not only is Jesus in control of this legion of demons, which are uncontrollable, he casts them into swine that die in the sea, which is uncontrollable. Jesus is using the uncontrollable to control the uncontrollable. And what's more frightening than the uncontrollable? The one who can control the uncontrollable. That is amazing.
Bringing order back into creation
right.
is what he's doing. And that's right. What grace, that's what the sacraments
yeah.
are meant to do.
Yeah.
And here, I don't think that this little boy who's dressing up like a little girl and has these big, thick eyelashes
on. Not even as a little girl.
This is a drag queen. Yeah. I mean, just looking at this, it's so confusing. But here, if you don't recognize already that this is exploitation of a child, this is the forcing of political views and ideologies on a child. Remember, this children, the mom claims he has autism. And I only say claims because it was one comment that the mom made. It's not been verified to my knowledge. This child is also performing in gay bars now, mm-hmm. as well. Actually, in fact, people of the LGBTQ community are actually, some of them, getting a little upset about this. One patron of a gay bar actually commented on Yelp, quote, "I left after seeing a child dance on stage for money at nighttime. This was on Saturday night, and I have been feeling disturbed ever since."
Yeah, not just for money, but it's that they were throwing money at him.
In fact, they were half naked men on the stage giving him money during this nightclub dance and performance. And in fact, I think they said at one point in one of the clubs that Desmond was doing a little bit of like a striptease, a child. I am looking at this, you guys. If you're listening, you're just going, this is too much. You need to listen right now. Because you and I both need to talk to our friends, family members who are struggling with this whole gay agenda, homosexuality, all of these issues of the transgender movement, and who are justifying it, saying, no, this is a political ideology being forced on a kid, and this kid's being sold out for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this article does a very good job of kind of setting up some other hypothetical scenarios of, right. You know, if this was being done in other circumstances, would it most clearly not be, you know, exploitation?
Right.
You
know, Jennifer Roback Moore writes for the National Catholic Register here talking about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially striking to me because she gives the image of, if we had a priest, you know, take an 11-year-old boy and dress him up like a woman and, you know, parade him around without touching him, without abusing him, you know, but presenting him to this community and leading him into this, how much outrage would there be? But because it's his own parents, supposedly, who are, you know, in charge of this, no outrage.
They're so accepting. They love him. They're promoting him to be who he is, quote unquote. I my heart is breaking for this child. And I just look at Good Morning America, because some of this news isn't news that's come out post the Good Morning America interview that took place in November. A lot of this news, these are actually videos that were available online, things that have been taking place. And so suddenly Good Morning America thinks it's okay to celebrate an 11-year-old boy who is dancing in gay clubs and has strippers and different people passing him money. In fact, there was actually another video where Desmond, quote unquote, the amazing, is then actually doing a video with a drag queen, and they're talking, and they start making jokes about ketamine, which is, again, another drug specifically used within the homosexual community. It's a party drug. Actually, this has been attributed as a cause for an increase in STDs among the homosexual community, because some of how it interacts with the body and what people are willing to endure
physically. Gets rid of inhibitions as well.
Yeah, so between, again, male on male, female on female sexual interaction, the body parts aren't meant to be there. So then the increase, I'm sorry to be so vulgar, but in tearing and the positioning of different body parts going where they're not meant to be really significantly increases your risk of STDs, because certain body parts are not prepared for that level of exposure to disease and even just contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the reference to this drug in this video that you're mentioning, you know, it shows that he has some familiarity with this drug.
Yes.
This 11-year-old has some familiarity with this drug, because he seems to kind of simulate the taking of this drug,
like
in a moment.
Sniffing, you know, as the drug's mentioned
right,
by name.
Right, right. And so that an 11-year-old has that kind of familiarity with that, and that it's tied to the his expression of himself. You know, that's another thing, is we are tying his identity to all of this and letting him do the same. When, you know, any young person at the age of 11 has not figured out who they are. Their body hasn't even figured out who they are. You know, typically puberty hasn't even set in. The natural processes of the body has not set in. So how could, you know, one identify themselves, one, with their sexuality, as, you know, their orientation, their identity? How can that be their identity as who they are at their very, very core?
Right.
you know, when that's must be debatable at, for adults. But no, we're looking at an 11-year-old and applauding him for being who he is. I wish I knew who I was now, let alone as an 11-year-old.
Yeah. And the confusion that creates when your parents are encouraging something. And again, if this child has autism, in addition to everything else that's going on, we need to speak up about this. In fact, Dr. Jennifer Oback Morse is saying, you know, maybe the average person can't really do anything, but what people can do, especially in the same sex, you know, the LGBTQ community, is say, you know what, I may be living this lifestyle, but I can admit, I can see that this is wrong. Just like the one person who ended up leaving a review on Yelp. Clearly he's at a gay bar, but he himself ends up recognizing like, hey, this is too far. He's talking about how he's been feeling disturbed ever since. It's making him question his lifestyle and interaction. Here's the thing. This little boy who's 11 years old, Desmond, clearly having a familiarity with different types of drugs, date rape drugs, and specifically drugs having to do with gay sex, gay party drugs, that is pointing to the fact that the LGBTQ community, unfortunately, is often a community that is very entrenched on getting drunk, high, or whatever is necessary to have these sexual exploits that take place. I remember Sarah Winter, who was major in the really pro-feminist movement in South America. Mm-hmm. She had actually talked a lot about how she had been sexually abused within the community, how there was a pressure for her to take different drugs, be very drunk in order to interact in the ways that she had. And she really was a victim of that community. Desmond, it's breaking my heart because we're seeing he is a product of that community forcing an agenda, trying to get another political activist into their clutches here.
Yeah. So what are we supposed to do with this? I must continue to point towards the organizations within the church, such as Courage.
Absolutely.
And their desire that, you know, that people who have had this experience, who've lived in these communities, can know that they are beloved children of God, sons and daughters of God, that they are capable of sainthood and sanctity. Maybe that's all we can do right now is, you know, yes, we can email these organizations and let them know our displeasure, but we've got to be praying and fasting for all the young people who are seeing this.
Specifically for Desmond.
For Desmond, you know, he could be one of the greatest saints the church has ever known. If we start praying for him and fasting for him now, we don't know what God has in store for him. But it's got to, you know, it could be greater what God has in store for him now than if he wasn't going through all of this. Yeah. You know, who are we to say that God can't be working with this and preparing one of the greatest saints? So be praying for Desmond, his family, and for all of the other young people who are being told, you know, be who you are. This is who you are. Express yourself completely free from the old ideals and without, you know, encouraging them to grow up as boys and girls. Let them be children.
And their identity before God. And I mean, the Catholic Church talks too. And you don't have to bring the Catholic Church up necessarily in your conversation, but for those of you who are formed, who love your faith, who are choosing to see reason, not only does the physical material elements of our body point to our sex, right? Or if you want to call it gender, but you know, there are only two, so that's fine if you want to use the word gender. But also realizing the fact that we look at how actually, in fact, our sex, our biology also is developed in our soul, whether male or female, that is ingrained not just in our body and our soul, how we act, who we are, and it's important to remember. I want to change gears here for a second. That's Father Tim Grumbach. I'm Timory Millington. Maybe you're experiencing, or maybe you know someone who's experiencing the post-holiday blues. You know, you're just getting through the Christmas season, heading through the new year. You've had lots of family around. Maybe you're feeling a little lonely. Maybe you've been through a recent breakup. Maybe you're at a state in your life and you're like, man, I thought I would have been married. There's a lot going through your mind. I've seen that, and it's challenging, and it's something that I think is becoming increasingly more difficult in our culture. I think it's something we've got to talk about.
Yeah, and to find some challenge and some encouragement in it as well, rather than to see, you know, singleness as loneliness, as perhaps I've missed what God was trying to do in my life years ago, and now I'm paying the price for that. You know, understanding every vocation is something that God is having a conversation with us with. You know, it's a dialogue. It's not some ironclad will that if we miss that one moment that God had hidden somewhere in our past, that we're going to suffer for the rest of our lives. You know, God is going to be shaping our lives. He is capable of shaping our lives even in the midst of our mistakes. And if we do miss anything, but you know, we were talking about this, you know, is this a legitimate question? Is is singleness a vocation?
Mm-hmm. And this is actually an episode. We're going to do a whole episode on it in a couple weeks. This is a little bit of a teaser for that. But we have to ask questions now, like, how do you find joy being single? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we have to remember, first and foremost, we have seven sacraments. And again, this is a bit of a teaser, but two of them specifically are vocational. Mm-hmm. And Jesus, in our last episode with Father Tim, we talked about how Jesus at his birth are given three gifts. And one of them is myrrh, and it's prophesying, it's recognizing his death, his vocation, where he's meant to go, and the opportunity for a holy orders or consecrated life, and then also for marriage, are two vocations, two ways that God uses the material reality of our service, of our commitment to one another, and brings his graces into our lives.
Yeah. And so, you know, not to get too far into this conversation, you're going to be having another episode, but we see singleness so often as, you know, defined with loneliness, that they're equated.
Right. But we've got to talk, how do you find joy being single?
Right.
How do you find joy? And maybe you're dating for a prolonged period of time. And I think one of my best answers is your singleness right now, no matter what's happened in the past, can be a gift right now to grow in your faith radically. Even if you're saying, I've been growing, well, here you have more time.
Right. More time to let God be shaping you, be forming you. And I know it's easy for us to say, you know, I've found my vocation as a priest. You're getting so close to married life.
But you and I both had those long periods of time where that's not where we were.
Right. And having wished during that time that we had focused more on letting God shape us within that experience of singleness, and, you know, kind of discerning what is singleness? What is God's plan within that singleness?
I can tell you, for me personally, you know, while I dated for a much longer period of time than I ever would have planned, what was important for me was to recognize that this time is a gift. And so creating a good prayer life, good habits, you know, I can go to daily mass. You may or may not want to stay out late, but you can make the commitment to get up early and go to daily mass. You can make that commitment of a more rigorous prayer life or volunteering. You have this incredible opportunity to volunteer your time. So what, you don't have something to do on a Friday night? Yeah, that can be challenging. That can be really difficult. But there are always opportunities to give of yourself, to your family, to your friends. And I think so often we turn in on ourselves in these circumstances.
Yeah. And, you know, this turning in on ourselves, it can happen even within our very prayer life.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind me asking, were you ever taught to pray for your future spouse?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
How did you feel about that?
It's something that I did since I was a little kid, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember hearing it, to pray for your future spouse. And so it was something that I always remembered, to pray for my future spouse, and not just, you know, the person that I'm dating at the time, but praying for my spouse, because this person may or may not be it.
Yeah, I've got some mixed feelings on the thought of praying for our future spouse.
I think because we need to pray for our vocation.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And if that is meant to be, if my spouse is out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so sometimes we can get, you know, so turned inward, even in that prayer for somebody else, to say, oh, I've already got my vocation decided, and I'm going to start praying for this person who I may not have even met yet, rather than praying for my vocation, or rather than just praying as a moment of intimacy between God and myself, knowing that he has a gift of a vocation there for me. And then again, that question is singleness a vocation.
Yeah. And I actually have to comment, to me, it was always the two, right? Mm-hmm. Even when dating, I always had to be open to that calling that I am not in my vocation.
Right.
I am not married. Mm-hmm. Am I? And especially because we dated for almost 6 years now. Maybe am I being called to religious life, and being open to that question at multiple points and checking in.
Yeah. So prayer becomes more than just, God, I wish this to happen, but an openness to what, you know, that conversation that God is having with us. If he's going to be open to the mistakes that we make and willing to form them, you know, he's calling us into an openness to listen to, you know, his plan may not be our plan.
Yeah. And if you are praying for your future spouse, you're praying for what your spouse is. Your spouse may be the church.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that I always had that understanding that the true spouse for myself, and even just in prayer, like, we pray at the end of the day because that is our spouse. That is our vocation first and foremost. And even married or unmarried, that is our first vocation with our Lord. We're going to come back in talking about this.
Timory will be right back. tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Timmery here. Father Tim Grumbach is with me, and we're talking about the post-holiday blues. Maybe you've been through a recent breakup, or maybe you've just been so full of joy having all these family and friends around, or maybe it's been challenging because you've had this vacation, this time off, but you don't have that spouse and those children, and maybe your other siblings and family members do, and you're just kind of feeling here like, I am missing something. And you, it's a reminder of it, of that singleness you might be experiencing, that loneliness. And so a teaser, because Dr. Philip and I are actually going to do a whole episode coming up soon on singleness, but Father Tim and I wanted to talk a little bit about, what about the single life as a vocation?
Right. And what do we mean by vocation? You know, at the heart of it is the concept of a relationship. Right. And so sometimes we'll think that a vocation is something that's meant just for me. This is just what God has planned for me. But there's these webs. There are these webs of relationships that form a vocation. You know, the vocation to my priesthood is not something I came up with on my own. You know, first it had to begin in my home, my experience of religion within my family, you know, the domestic church. For some priests, it's that there was no church in their home and they wanted a deeper relationship with the church and found that in the priesthood. They found they were called to the priesthood. And so it begins in the home, as John Paul II would call it. It was his first seminary was watching his dad pray at the foot of his bed, right? Mm-hmm. So vocation begins with this web of relationships that begins in the home, whether it's really broken in some other places or it's really healthy in others or somewhere in between. And then vocation, not only looking at these webs of relationships, you know, as a priest, I can speak, I have to be called by the church. It can't just be like, oh, I feel called to be a priest, you know, and that's my decision. I also have to be called by my bishop, by the church. And so vocation is not something that we do by ourselves. So can we speak of singleness by itself as a vocation? I believe that some people are called to a consecrated single life, a consecrated virginity. That's an ancient, ancient tradition in the church. But that it requires promises and vows that are made. Because otherwise, some people feel, well, I just never found the person for me, so I guess I'm going to be single. And they feel like they've fallen into their vocation. I don't think any of us fall into our vocations. You know, I don't think that's God's plan for us. Mm-hmm. He can work miraculous things with the ways that we relate to other people and the kind of vocations that he calls us into. But I think it's important to speak of vocations as something that we are found within, but not something that we fall into. And so sometimes people have the experience of single life as something that they've fallen into and wonder, and it weighs their hearts down thinking, well, did I miss the one? And instead of seeing what God has placed in front of them, their hearts can be so focused on what God has not placed in front of them.
And I think it points to the importance of gratitude, of being grateful for what you do have here and now. You know, I was reading, I was feeling very overwhelmed and stressed out the other day, and there's a lot going on. And I just happened to read one of the scripture passages, you know, let today the evil of today be sufficient for today. Right, like, oh, yes, like we are called to live one day at a time. We are called to this union with God, yet we sometimes, even if you're married, even if you're dating, well, I'm waiting for that engagement, I'm waiting for that baby, I'm waiting for that new job, we're always focused on what is next rather than living right now. But we have to recognize, what are our commitments and responsibilities today? And some people, again, say, like, I've just fallen into this, I'm here. No, you need to commit your life to something. Because being an accountant is something great, but committing your life to our Lord in that, maybe you are called to be a consecrated single person, but consecrated virginity, truly living that out and now serving your community at the same time.
Yeah, that consecration happens within a community. It's, again, one of the great, beautiful ancient traditions of the church is this consecrated virginity, where, you know, what we see it most is women consecrating their virginity to the church. And that it's not just them making a decision, well, I guess I'm never getting married, so I guess I'm going to do this and just live by myself. But there are some amazing women, especially, and some men out there who have consecrated themselves to the service of the church. And so what I recommend to people discerning this vocation is get to know the mission and the vision your bishop has for your diocese. Or if you want to be connected to a religious order, there's many different ways to do that. Tertiaries in different religious orders, lay people who make a commitment to that religious order, get to know the charisms and the visions of these orders or the dioceses so that you know what kind of service you're being called to within that diocese.
And this will also soften your heart to being maybe more open to actually becoming a religious sister a brother or a priest. I think a lot of men forget that it's not just that you have the opportunity to be a priest. You could be a religious brother, right? Mm-hmm. Living that monastic lifestyle, but not actively practicing as a priest. I think that a lot of people I find maybe have had one, two, or maybe no experiences with religious sisters. Actually, Father, I had someone say this to me a couple of years ago. Well, nuns don't do anything. Why would I want to be a nun?
Right.
I was astounded. I know so many talented nuns working in bioethics, nuns who are nurses. You know, I could go on and on in the different areas, you know, consecrated in perpetual adoration, praying in perpetual adoration. Like, there's so many things that it's a different way to consecrate our gifts to God so that everything we do has a more profound meaning.
Yeah, and the discernment of what your life is going to be consecrated to within the single life is, you know, being aware of the bishop's vision and his mission and the charisms of the, you know, maybe even the parish that you're a part of, is being aware of those charisms and knowing that, yeah, some of those charisms might be the contemplative life. And, you know, there was kind of a rise in the thought in the church over the last few decades that, you know, the contemplative life or the contemplative orders, you know, whether they're, maybe in the streets a little bit and teaching a little bit, but especially those orders that are, they're in their monasteries and they don't ever come out, it seems. Like, what good are they doing for the church right now? I'm like, well, if you're aware of what, like, you know, St. Dominic, when he was founding the Dominicans, you know, first founded the Order of Sisters so they could be praying for them. And so this powerhouse, you know, the heartbeat of the church is in the Eucharist and these men and these women who have dedicated their lives to praying for the mission of the church, even though we don't get to see them, you know, to know Saint Therese of Lisieux, one of the most powerful intercessors that we have, one of the, you know, a doctor of the church, right? And she, you know, went into Carmel at age 15, died when she was 24, and the world would say, oh, how insignificant she was. And, you know, she's turned the world upside down through her spirituality.
Yet she dedicated her life to something. And I think that that's what a lot of people, even people who are maybe you're dating for a longer period of time. And maybe it's that you're not committing your life to something. I was just looking at statistics the other day. Men who are married make more money, are more satisfied in life, have better sex lives than men who are not married. You know, you just look at this, committing your life to something, taking on responsibility, transforms who you are. And this is what we're saying with this consecrated single life, that if you are truly consecrating yourself to our Lord, his mission, the gifts, what you are called to do, that's going to give meaning to your suffering, to your life, to what you are doing day to day.
Yeah, so we have the beautiful, you know, twin concepts. You've got, you know, the promise that gives meaning, but you've also got it, that promise happens within a community. Mm-hmm. And so that we can make individual promises to God, which is a beautiful thing, but to do it within a community, within the body and the bride of Christ, is to make that promise, you know, and have somebody holding us accountable and someone praying for us, and let God fit our charisms into the church. You know, and these charisms, they're not, you know, that you know, can be expressed in the single life. They're not meant for us. They're meant for the church. Every charism is meant for the building up of the church.
I could actually give one example of this. Yeah. Janet Smith, who's very well known in doing a lot of work on Humanae Vitae, teaching the church's teaching on contraception, responding to the homosexuality issue within the culture. She has lived a single life for a very, very long time. And she finally said, you know, just recently, she said, thank God, I made it official. She said, you know, I'm now a consecrated virgin. She made the joke, I was here to recently, you know, I was shacking up with Jesus long enough, I thought I'd make it official. You know, but recognizing that this is the way she actually lives within a community of women as well. Mm-hmm. So she has a community of women and she has a mission that she is accomplishing in service to Christ. And maybe that's what you're being called to in your singleness.
Right. And, you know, I was using the language of, you know, we don't just fall into our vocations, but I know that there will be some of you out there listening to us who feel like, oh, it feels like I'm falling into my vocation right now. And, you know, what is Father Tim talking about? He's saying that I don't know what I'm doing, that that I'm not discerning this correctly. You know, come and talk to your priests. We want to have these conversations to help you discern your vocation. You know, we're not going to have the answers for you. We're ultimately probably going to tell you, well, you've got to choose. You know, where is God calling you to? We want to walk beside you and hear your stories and see what kind of gifts and charisms that you have to offer to the church. So a major part of that discernment of, you know, am I being called to the consecrated single life is, you know, what are the charisms God has blessed me with? And how does he want to build up the church through these charisms?
And being grateful for the charisms, mm-hmm. those gifts he has given you, ways to serve. And if you don't know what they are, and I find that many people who are experiencing this single life, I don't know what I'm good at. Mm-hmm. I don't know what my talents are. Start by being grateful for what you have. And I'm not just talking materially. The friendships you have, the good day-to-day interactions. I find some of the days when I'm struggling most, whether it's with anxiety, anger, whatever it might be, resentment, what I do is I stop, I take my rosary before I go to bed, and on each and every single bead, of course, making sure you pray your rosary first that day, spending your time with your mother there, on each and every single bead, naming one thing I'm thankful for, one after another, until I make it all the way around. And surprisingly, it may me feel difficult at moments, but then you actually go, no, and you can keep going, and you make your way all the way around, and you offer that gratitude to God, and you are more yourself in speaking that truth in those moments. And it's a moment to get outside of yourself and that negativity sometimes.
Yeah, it's so beautiful you recognize gratitude as, you know, the healing balm to resentment. You know, discerning a vocation can be such a moment of resentment. Like, what have I missed? Why has God not given me this? But where resentment rises out of the ground, it's got to be a seedbed for gratitude as well.
Absolutely. That's Father Tim Grumbach. I'm Timory Millington. We will be right back on Trending.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
It's great to be with you guys. I wanted to talk for a second. Father Tim Grumbach is in studio. We're looking at what's been going on. Like this new year, I had to take a big, deep breath. It was wonderful to be away from the news for a second. But then one of the things I heard last week, you know, one of the first things of the new year is that the new House takes over. They have a Democrat majority. And the very first thing they do has to do with abortion. Giving wider access to abortion, trying to bring about $100 million more in funding for abortion internationally. And it's just astounding that right away, this Mexico City policy that's trying to prevent us from paying for abortion to foreign organizations or pulling us out of the International Population Fund that contributes to the one-child policy in China, that they say, nope, we're going to get this bill and we're going to have it be about abortion first.
And it's not only going to bring back the federal funding that has been taken away, it's actually going to add to it, is it not?
Yeah, it's adding additional funding. And what's ridiculous is that when President Trump and his administration really brought about these pro-life policies, reinstating Mexico City policy, saying that we're not going to give any foreign aid, especially medical aid, to any organization that performs abortions. Well, guess what? They only eliminated funding to organizations that performed abortions. We're still giving tons of millions of dollars to over 700 different groups who receive foreign aid to provide adequate medical care. And what was great is that, in fact, Planned Parenthood, the International Planned Parenthood, had to shut down 22 programs throughout Africa that were giving access to abortion to the African people who, in fact, culturally do not want abortion.
Right. We've come a long way from there. The catchphrase was rare, safe, and legal, was it not?
That was the Democrat Party's motto, rare, safe, and legal. We don't really want abortion.
Yeah. But it's on the rise. And when we see that this is their first action, having, you know, gained the majority, they've come a long way from that. And we're bordering now, not just bordering, we're stepping over that border into ideological colonization, as, you know, Pope Francis has used that terminology as well. And some of the strongest voices coming out of Africa now saying, we don't want this here. And these Western nations are bringing this, you know, contraception and abortion and all of these other ideologies into their cultures. And it's starting to feel to them, and we hear this from African voices, that they think they know better than us.
Yeah. They're colonizing areas mm-hmm. that is not the culture. Actually, Obi Anuju, who is a very loud voice, is speaking.
And one of the best.
Yeah, all over Europe, the UN, all over the world, talking about how in the African language, in her dialect, there is no word for abortion, that human life is celebrated. And one of the things that came out in talking about this is, in fact, one of the organizations, the Marie Stopes International Organization, which is one of the four organizations that was being funded by the United States to provide abortions and no longer has been since the 2017 policy that I almost said the Pope, the President Trump really pushed forward here, making sure that we had pro-life policies. Well, guess what? When Marie Stopes International has been working, they've actually been giving contraceptive devices, going into the schools without parent consent, giving these devices, implanting them into 14-year-old girls' bodies. That is not what the people there in Kenya want. And the tribesmen and different people have been speaking out against it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ideological colonization, where you know a people is literally going in there to disrupt a culture and to disrupt life. It's literally disrupting life. There's no figurative about it.
Yeah, so, and they don't want it. How dare we force this funding? And again, it's a moment we've got to reconvene, rethink about. If this is what this party is pushing so heavily, is it something as Catholics that we can morally be a part of? And we can't, you guys. We're talking about human life. We're talking about the development of the human person and having children and growing a family, committing their life to something. You know, young people are struggling today to find their vocation. They're struggling today because they're choosing it. In some cases, we hear about young people who are experiencing infertility crisis because they recognize I worked too much during my fertile years. And it's because we have this radical anti-life mindset within our culture.
And that can begin to build up that resentment we were talking about in discerning a vocation is, oh, did I miss what I was made for? Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, vocation is so much more than career. We know this, that it is what God made us for. And it's you know, the way that God wants to use the charisms he has gifted us with in order to build up the body of Christ. And if we feel like we've missed that moment or that God has not given us those gifts, we're going to build up in resentment. And we're seeing this. A lot of people are saying, I worked during the years that I could have been a mother, that I could have been a father. And resentment is definitely the temptation that comes up in those moments.
Mm, absolutely. I want to talk about something that the church came out discussing just over the last couple weeks here from the Congregation Doctrine of Faith on hysterectomies and tubal ligation. This is really important. Back in 1993, it was really reaffirmed in the church's teaching that such things were not licit for the sake of sterilization, because even if a woman was risking death, the idea of having a child was impactful on her health, that a woman could not be sterilized to avoid children to save her life. Because the church believes, you know, in so many ways, and we'll get into this, the miracles of life, of God working in our life, but also that a primary vocation as parents is to having children. And that if for some reason we do have a legitimate reason to avoid having children, that we can practice through NAPRO technology and through abstinence, abstaining from conceiving a child during the fertile period of a woman's cycle.
Yeah, and we can speak about this as a church because we have the image of the cross. We have the language of sin and redemption, and we believe in miracles. You know, this isn't saying we're not going to use any medical technology because I believe God will heal me of everything at every moment, and so I don't believe in medical technology. No, but what we're saying is that our faith is built off of these experiences of miracles, especially miraculous births, all the way through the Old Testament into the New Testament. You know, the gospel is... There is no gospel without miraculous birth.
Hannah, Rebecca, Elizabeth, Our Lady. I mean, talk about women who were barren, couldn't have children, who were too old, and these miracles being brought about. And so here's where the church has come out over the last couple weeks saying, okay, we're going to talk about hysterectomies again here. And it's saying how, okay, the policy of 1993 that has continued what the church teaching is still in place. It is illicit to have tubal ligation and any type of hysterectomy work done here. But what's happened now is people are saying, well, what if the uterus is moved, for example, in the case of a woman who is postmenopausal, let's say, that the uterus can be removed? Or what if, this was the other question, what if a woman is still fertile, but if she were to conceive, medically it is believed, or should I say assumed, that that child would be a miscarriage? The term, just to be clear, in the document that the church uses is what if a spontaneous abortion will happen? Mm-hmm. It's assumed it will happen. That's a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. That language they're saying is, well, it could be licit, given kind of resting on your conscience that you have a hysterectomy or tubal ligation. But this is very confusing and I think is very much so going to be abused. In the case of someone who has had, let's say, is in menopause and would like to have a hysterectomy, I could see why maybe the church might be saying, okay, for medical reasons, when there's absolutely no other option, perhaps that's allowed because they're still open to life, but it's not even possible for them to have a children. But there is some confusion here when they're saying, well, if it's assumed that that child is going to be a miscarriage, it may maybe you could have this done.
Yeah, it's definitely a gray area that I don't know if they're invoking the law of double effect. And if you don't know the law of double effect, you know, others have far more eloquently than I'm about to explain this. But if for the mother's health, if there is something that is actively dangerous for her health, you can treat that illness, and for example, if she's pregnant and the child dies in that treatment, then it is not a murder, it is not an abortion, it's the double effect. Their first intended effect was to treat the mother.
So say she receives chemotherapy while she's pregnant, if the baby dies as a result, that was not intentionally trying to kill the child.
That's right.
Right, versus intentionally being like, I have chemo, I don't want to have chemo until this baby's gone, so I'm going to abort my baby, then have chemo.
Right, right. And so in the case of these hysterectomies, as the CDF is pointing out, one could say that if it's for the mother's health, that without this hysterectomy, she will not be able to survive. I don't know if that's ever the case.
But that's what the church is actually saying. That's not allowed.
Right.
So that's why there's confusion, because they're saying it's still the same teaching of what the church has reaffirmed in 1993. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of one of those areas, like you said, of gray area, where it's saying, well, you kind of, you know, whatever you think is right. But they're trying to say here that with certainty, there has to be certainty that there is no possibility for procreation. Mm-hmm. So in other terms, that you cannot conceive a child. Right. And so you remove the uterus, or if with certainty they know that the baby conceived will die. That's where I have a hard time with this language, because they say with certainty. Yeah, I know many people who have actually had, who the wife was in menopause and the husband had had a vasectomy and they had a miracle baby years later.
Yeah.
I know other couples who have also had children after years of not being able to have children and after multiple miscarriages. So I'm confused by why the church is saying this here.
Right. It's difficult to establish this medical certainty when we're a religion that believes in miracles.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you can tell that it's an attempt at being pastoral, and there will be much discussion had on this.
And debate.
And done, again, far more eloquently than I can offer. But we also have to consider, the miracles that we believe in our faith, that they're not just symbols for something God was doing in this world, but that he actively reached into history to bring about these miraculous births. And what does that have to do with our conversation about the CDF's document about hysterectomies?
And always remember that there is hope. Maybe you struggled to conceive a child. So many people have been able to conceive a child after years. Or maybe you're able to adopt, that this openness to life is a fundamental part of marriage and human development.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To book her to speak or learn more about her guest, visit radiotrending.com. That's radiotrending.com. You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes.